Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. Emily Rooney is sitting in for Marjorie Egan. In Utah, they are changing the death penalty from lethal injection to death by firing squad. That's four riflemen standing 25 feet away from a person strapped to a chair. Why? And closer to home, a trauma surgeon who treated Jahar Tsarnaev lays out the ethical web he got caught up in by giving Tsarnaev VIP medical care. Joining us on the line to take on these and other medical ethical issues is Art Kaplan. Art is the head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. He's also the co-host of the Everyday Ethics podcast. Hey there, Art.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
Hey, Art. Good to have you.
Hey.
So I've been going to the Tsarnaev trial, and I was saying to Jim that it's very noticeable that there's something wrong with Jahar Tsarnaev. You can see that he's got some permanent damage in his facial area. Reading this unbelievable account from this trauma surgeon, Dr. Stephen Odom at Beth Israel Deaconess, he was the one who treated him that night. And he says, you know, this had a bullet wound that came in through the side of his face and out through his mouth. So clearly he had some kind of a shattered jaw. But the dilemma for this surgeon was, you know, he knew he had this infamous patient he was going to be dealing with, and suddenly found himself giving him what's known as VIP treatment in a hospital, you know, with extra special care, with the top executives of the hospital were all around him, you know, the best trauma teams, and yet here he is trying to save the life of somebody who has just murdered four people.
Well, it's a tough dilemma, but medical ethics demands that you do what he did, meaning you don't make decisions about the worthiness of your patient, even when you know they're awful people, evil people. You know, even in combat, some of our listeners will know, we treat the enemy, the guy who was trying to shoot you or mortar you or shoot an artillery shell at you. If he comes in hurt, you don't treat him first, granted, but you do treat him. We do something that sometimes our enemies absolutely won't do, which is we take care of you if you are injured and you're before us. And you get it a lot in the emergency room. You know, there are people who've been involved in gang shootings. Yeah. You know, there are people who've abused their child and then maybe got stabbed or hurt by their partner for doing it. There's some pretty bad characters that enter hospitals. But the ethic is, it's not the doctor's job to make judgments. The doctor's job to treat him.
But beyond that, he had to talk to the guy. He had to communicate with him. And normally, you ask things like, what happened? How did you get into these circumstances? Mm-hmm. You want to know as much as you can. And yet, here's the FBI and all these other people standing around. You know, they wanted him to talk. They wanted to hear from him. But, you know, the doctor is thinking he's injured too badly.
Yeah. And again, you've got to respect your patient's health and interests first. The authorities may want that patient to speak. They may want you not to use pain-relieving meds to keep them conscious, even if they're in a lot of trouble. But the goal of the doctor, pretty simple. Do what you need to do that's best for the patient. One aspect of this that bothers me a little bit is when you get into the VIP treatment situation with everybody running around and the chairman of the department coming down as opposed to the resident, it's well known that you don't get the best care that way. The guy who's been sitting behind a desk for a month isn't the person you want to run down to the ER all of a sudden and start doing things. So even when presidents are assassinated, attempted assassinations take place, or other celebrities come in with problems, you try to maintain routine, and it's deviation from routine that actually winds up being the most risky thing you can do.
You know, there's another interesting question. I'm not sure there's an ethical issue here, but there may be. The doctor is asked in this interview on the MarshallProject.org, there's an irony in the government spending all these resources to make this man well in order to possibly execute him. And the doctor, Dr. Odom, goes on to say it never occurred to him, and in part because he was doing his job, and in part because he, you know, his quick thought was, well, we don't have the death penalty in Massachusetts. Of course, we don't for state crimes. We do potentially for federal crimes. That is a rather incredible irony, is it not?
It is. And, you know, you're often sitting there thinking, what are we doing this for? Occasionally a doctor will ask me if this guy's going to be executed or spend the rest of his life in jail. What's the point of doing all these fancy measures? But it's always after the fact, because when you're right on the front lines, you fix the person in front of you. You leave it to the judicial system, you leave it to the cops, you leave it to the prison system to sort out who's guilty, who's going to merit the death penalty, what's going to happen. When the sick person is in front of you, the ethic is, and I think it's the right one, fix them.
You know, I'm curious, though, that there was a lot of nurses, a lot of all kinds of attendants involved, and there was a lot of security to get to him. But who's really in control of that situation? I don't know if you've ever been in one of those situations. I mean, you know, who's
the attending
saying,
doc? That is the person.
But in terms of information, because if I were one of the nurses treating him, you know, I'd go home and tell my wife or husband, or I said, guess who I had? And then you'd tell your kid. And then before you know it, the details about his injuries are out. I mean, is there somebody there who's saying, here's the situation and you have to attend, you have to follow go along with the following regulations?
There is. Any institution that has the ability to have a press officer is going to have a lockdown on what you can say. You're not supposed to talk about this with anybody when there's a celebrity or someone notorious coming in. It's all supposed to go through the press department. They're very insistent on that. Is it the case that that works? Almost never, because it always leaks out. It always does.
We're talking to Art Kaplan, medical ethicist from NYU. Art, speaking of the death penalty, there's a story that even if we're going to discuss this with listeners in a few minutes, even if you're an ardent supporter of the death penalty, the Utah legislature has voted, because of all the issues about drugs that are used for lethal injections, and there obviously have been some problems, to reinstate the firing squad. A couple of dozen feet away, these riflemen shoot at the heart of. When you hear that in 2015, again, regardless of where you are on the death penalty, what's your immediate reaction, Art Kaplan?
We got to be able to do better than firing squads. You know, the first invention to make capital punishment humane, you know what it was?
Electric chair.
No. Guillotine. Guillotine.
Oh, okay.
Ugh.
So
to make it humane?
To make it humane.
It's
in its
fast.
Day, they thought, you know, putting people on the rack and generally stabbing them to death and stoning them, not so good. Let's go to something humane. We'll chop their heads off. We've been through many generations. Electric chair was certainly one of the inventions to make it more humane. But because we're in this completely ridiculous situation where we can't make drugs that we know will work to let people be killed painlessly, we're reverting back to things like the firing squad. The firing squad, I will give it about 30 seconds before there's a court challenge.
Yeah.
It's going to go right up to the Supreme Court. They're going to say it's cruel and unusual, and they're going to be back to square zero. So either the country decides it's going to have some budget to make chemicals that will help people die painlessly that can be administered intravenously. You know, we have drugs, but you have to be willing to swallow them. Barbiturates, that's the assisted suicide technique, but the rest of the world won't supply us with those drugs, and they're all made overseas. So either make them or forget it. That's kind of my attitude.
Well, and the reason, to finish the sentence, the reason the rest of the world, for the most part, won't supply them is because the rest of the world, in this particular case, are from nations that are against the death penalty. So is the debate begun or is it too soon? Well, actually, in the Globe, it's begun today on the op-ed page that essentially this firing squad is what those resistors in Western Europe have wrought. Essentially, they withhold the drugs. As a result, we have these drug nightmares in executions. And what Utah, at least the legislature, would say they're left with is we got to shoot these people because we can't get the drugs.
I don't think you're going to be able to sustain firing squads that, by the way, have to be public to some extent. It's required that there be witnesses, that there be, you know, that these things be observed. It's too cruel, too barbaric. It may not work right, by the way. That's another problem. I think you're going to wind up still moving toward the elimination of the death penalty unless you can do it by some sort of chemically drug-induced death. Everything else, I think, electric chair and all the other ideas, you just hear about them and you say, too barbaric.
By the way,
never going to stand up.
What does the federal government use?
I think lethal injection, doesn't
it?
Or does
they
it?
Do.
That was Tim McVeigh was lethal.
Yeah. But you know, Art, there are, with the proper drug mix and adequate supplies, putting aside whether it violates the Constitution's prohibition against cruel and unusual, there are painless ways to execute people if the drugs are there and the administering of it is done competently, no?
Correct. Absolutely true. Yes.
Okay.
You need to have properly trained people. By the way, you don't really need doctors. You need executioners to put the lines in and do it right.
Well, I thought doctors can't even do it, can they? Can doctors
do
it?
Well, doctors ethically are not supposed to do it. There are occasionally doctors who do it, who do get involved. They just violate the sort of code of ethics, but they do it, but not many. But you don't need them. You need, again, to come back to this, what you need is executioners who know how to wire up the patient, get the right volume of drug in at the right pace in the right place. It can be done.
Absolutely. We figured it out with dogs and horses.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, can we continue this stream, Art Kaplan, of thoroughly uncomfortable stories? There is a story in The Atlantic about a family that is confronting a colossal medical bills. Insurance would only cover some of them, trying to save their child. And what they have resorted to is essentially a crowdfunding campaign to raise the dough to be able to treat their kid. They went on the site, I think it's called youcaring.com. They raised 50 or 60 grand, which was not enough. Then newspapers, national networks started covering it. And now all this debate has been engendered about the discomfort of what is being called peer-to-peer charitable giving. Instead of giving it to an organization which theoretically knows what it's doing and makes wise choices, you go online and you say, well, this kid is a more sympathetic donee than that kid. Do you have any problem with this, or is this what's the problem?
First of all, begging in public is no way for a humane society, presumably this one, to deal with kids. I mean, really? We're going to tell kids' parents to go out and beg? Is that it? That's what we got? So, not in this country, too rich. I think every kid should be covered to the max. Every one of us should be taxed to pay for it.
But we're not. Let me interrupt you, Art.
So short of that, the next problem is squeaky wheels get the attention. If you're cute and you have a puppy and the right disease, you're going to do better than if a disease ravages you and your family's a mess. And maybe you don't even know how to get a social media campaign going. You're not willing to, or you don't know how to. So the whole notion of crowdsourcing is something, you know, that's a gentrification solution.
Well, but how is this any different than, you know, creative fundraising? Remember last summer for ALS, we had the ice bucket challenge.
It's the disease. You know, no one's doing creative fundraising for urinary incontinence. Who's going to step forward and say, I really care about
that. No one was doing it for ALS either until this.
But I mean, it's going to be tough to get the celebrities or tough to get the creative energy. There are certain diseases that are just too yucky. We don't like them. They may be awful. They may cause tremendous suffering. The dementias, until movies like Still Alice rolled around, were kind of in that category. But what I would say is this. If you're going to return to crowdsourcing, the other problem is the internet is about as honest as it is for date sites. You don't know who's out there.
That's
begging.
True.
You have no idea who they are. I could put up a site and say, you know, look at me, put up a picture of me from, you know, 45 years ago. I'm pretty diseased. Help me. I mean, there's no check. There's no
But you don't have to give either.
You don't have to give, but you can certainly be duped.
But the bottom line is, the in the perfect world that you're describing, which I think all three of us and our listeners would like to live in, until we get there, which is not imminent, as much as it troubles you and actually troubles me too, this is the only recourse for a family like this that wants to keep their kid alive, right?
I don't grudge a family doing it, trying to do what they need to do to help their kid. I'm just saying that's not a system. It's a contest. Let me add something else. If you're the fifth person online, not the first, but the fifth one with a kid who's got a problem, you're not getting anywhere either, because our interest level for that sort of thing rapidly diminishes. There won't be stories in the media. People are only going to give to the first time. After that, you know, you get down to number 5, 10, and 20, this isn't going to help.
We're talking Art Kaplan, medical ethicist extraordinaire. Now, finally, we have some good news, Art. It's all been bad news. I probably stuffed more Kraft singles in my mouth as a kid than all of Cleveland together, or Framingham in your case. So I'm reading from this ABC News story, which is great news.
By the way, I got to interrupt. I know you're setting this up, but I have to tell you. My school lunch in the distinguished burg of Framingham, when we had our 25-cent school lunch, butter sandwich, spaghetti, and then I think we had, if I'm not mistaken, some type of cake. So go with Kraft Singles. Yeah, let us go forward.
By the way, butter sandwiches are one of Marjorie's favorites, not as a kid, but as an adult. In any case, so the first line in this ABC story, ABC News, Kraft Singles will soon display the, quote, Kids Eat Right logo from the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. So that's good news. I assume they're really nutritious and really good for you, no?
Well, they're not awful, but I don't know any consumer who's going to walk down the aisle and not think, hey, this is blessed by nutritionists. This is really great. In fact, Kraft kind of worked it the other way and appealed to the nutritionist to get the logo put on there. In the nutritionist, I don't know if they got paid.
Yes, they were paid.
They did pay.
So they got paid, and they're slapping their approval seal on this thing, but it's not like it's the best food or the wonderful food. It's just like a source of calcium food. I think everybody's going to assume what you are. You know, let's eat more.
I find this outrageous.
So do I.
This is false advertising. I don't understand why the... what's that advertising commission? Why aren't they after them? This is they bought a logo, and it's kind of like that breast cancer
Federal
stuff.
Trade Everything commission, is pink. You
they're
mean,
not giving anything to breast cancer. They just put a pink thing on it.
Yeah. So for me, it's like if you label that and you're a busy shopper and you go by, what are you going to think? You're going to think, hey, endorsed by nutritionists, I'm getting this. It's not to say you couldn't get your calcium out of 500 other sources, of which 498 might be cheaper, or maybe. You know, you don't need that cheese at all because you're eating some others. You know what I mean? So the whole thing, to me, it's like a scam.
Wait a second. First of all, is the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics a legit operation? Is
there, as far as I know, I don't know them.
That's a good question.
I don't know them in detail, but I think so.
Yes. Listen to this, the quote from their spokesperson. Kraft is putting the Kids Eat Right logo. This is not the Kraft spokesperson. This is a spokesperson for the Academy of Nutrition, et cetera. Kraft is putting Kids Eat Right logo on its packaging and saying Kraft is a proud supporter of Kids Eat Right, not vice versa. The Academy has never once endorsed the product. Now, of course you see it. It's a seal of approval. But there's another quote in this ABC News article that I don't understand, and it happens to be from you. Here's your quote, Art Kaplan. I have nothing against eating Kraft Singles. I can live with that. You go on to say, though, I'd feel the same way if the Eat Right logo appeared on broccoli. Why shouldn't it appear? I'm serious.
I don't think it should appear on anything. All right. Like you pay to get the logo stamped on your product. It's stupid. Why don't you just put it on a website or tell people to eat balanced diets? The reason I was making sneering remarks about broccoli is I hate broccoli. But put that on the side. There are plenty of other leafy green vegetables. It's not like broccoli is the only one. So this idea that this isn't a product endorsement is just silly. That's what everybody's going to see it as, and it's a bot endorsement.
You know, one thing, detail you left out, I just realized your Framingham story. I assume the butter sandwiches were on white bread, Sunbeam or something?
They were. Pretty sure they might have been on Wonder Bread, but I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, fine. Art Kaplan, last thing we have for you is apparently on the same day that the Apple Watch, which is apparently going to be a huge seller, the top one goes for $17,000, and they say they're going to manufacture 1 million a month, which is just surreal to me. Lower profile, Apple announced something called an Apple Research Kit that's going to be available for clinical trials. What is this, and is this a good thing, or is this something that should concern us?
Well, finally at the finish line, something not to moan about. It's okay. Apple basically said, on our phone, we have an app. If you want to sign up to do research, say your phone would monitor how far you walked, like a Fitbit, one of those things, it will dump into one of our research partners, fancy universities that they've partnered up with, and we will study that and figure out that the average person only walks as far as they can to get broccoli or whatever they're doing. So I don't have a problem with it. The consent is there. You sign the consent online to start this thing off. It's just a kind of a cool way to recruit people to different types of research projects, and that doesn't bother me. I think it's, as long as you go in eyes open, you know what you're signing up for, that's good. I think you might get a little skewed in the data, since if the only people who really have these apps are iPhone users and $17,000 watch wearers, it might be skewed slightly. But other than that, it's okay.
I mean, is it one of the concerns that other people could have access to the data? I mean, what's the ethical?
Yeah, so again, everything's supposed to be anonymized. You could sort of say, well, you know, it's my iPhone, and I don't really think there's too much anonymization. But I have to say, you know, there was a story out this week that yet another Blue Cross plan got hacked. I think 11 million records went out the window. that, you know, that they got stolen. I'm ready to say that privacy, somewhat like a parrot that used to be on Monty Python, is deceased, bereft of life, gone, exists no more. I mean, privacy of medical records between accidents and theft and hacking, boy, I don't know. I don't know.
Hey, Art Kaplan, before you go, Everyday Ethics Podcast, what's up this week?
Going to look at this football player, 24, oh, yeah, who said, I'm going to quit the game. I'm afraid of concussions. And, you know, there are always some people who say I'm going to quit the game because of whatever reasons, health or something else. But I think this is really going to impact football. I think parents are watching at high school and they're thinking, maybe not my kid playing that game.
You know, Chris Nowinski, who is the former Harvard football player and former pro wrestler, Harvard Chris, or Chris Harvard was his wrestling name, is a frequent guest on our show. He's a local guy out of BU now with Dr. Cantu that do these things. Mm-hmm. When you hear people like Tom Brady, who is idolized here, ask the question, would after one of these concussions...
Tom Brady's idolized here too, but go ahead.
Okay, when he's asked, after, let's say, Junior Seau or somebody dies, and people believe it's because of this... and his response is, and this is almost verbatim, hey, I think it'd be great if my kids play football, with no caveat, no saying, like LeBron James did, to his credit, I want them to be of a certain age, I want them to understand the risks. Does that not do colossal damage to parents who are deciding whether their young kids should take these kind of, and get engaged in these kind of concussive activities?
I think it does, for one thing. I don't think anybody under 12 should be playing tackle football, period, end of story. I know we've got all these TV shows that are watching the Texas Tykes, and they're coaching them up like they were the Pittsburgh Steelers, but why are we playing tackle football and risking those kinds of injuries for little kids? Let them play flag or touch or something. It's not like the skill set is going to go away. And there are injury problems with football, and they got to be taken seriously. But I'm telling you, a prominent guy like this, when he says, I'm going to not play.
What's his name? Chris
I worry
Borland?
About my health. I
Chris Nowinski.
Really
No. Chris, the guy, the 24-year-old. Chris Borland.
My
fear is that the NFL, I mean, this guy is just going to be forgotten by the time football season rolls around next fall.
You know, I think NFL fans will forget. They understand the risk thing. They like the big hits. In a way, we all watch it on TV or from the stands. You don't really see how brutally violent the game is as if you're standing on the sideline or playing it. But I think parents are starting to pay attention. You know, Pee Wee football participation in the U.S. down 7%. And by the way, hockey, for aficionados of that, in Canada is down about 7%. And I think that's all health-related.
Yeah, but you know, there's one story, if you haven't picked up on yet, and you probably know about it, and then we'll let you go. It's out of Massachusetts. Speaking about young football players, there was a game that involved two Pee Wee or Pop Warner teams, little kids. With Tantasqua was one of the teams. The rules are there's a mercy rule above a certain point level. You have to end the game. Well, they didn't. It went to 52-0. The losing team of single-digit age little boys, five of them had concussions. Five little kids had concussions. They missed school. And you say to yourself, if that doesn't cause people to go where you and Chris Nowinski and Dr. Cantu are, which is – no helmet contact, no tackle football at young ages, then what does? I mean, when you see the former quarterback of the Chicago Bears, McMahon, Super Bowl champion, who barely knows where he is, it's amazing to me that parents continue to allow their kids to do it. But in any case, we'll check out the Everyday Ethics podcast.
Well, let me add, those parents who let that game go in that direction, they should all be forced to eat Kraft singles.
All right, good to talk to you, Art Kaplan.
Art Kaplan. He joins us every Wednesday. He's head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU Langone Medical Center. Also the co-host of the Everyday Ethics podcast. All right, coming up, we're asking you about the death penalty, even if you're for it. Are you also? What about all these brutal modes that we use to execute people? That is the discussion on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.